Well, good afternoon, everyone. We're going to resume the hearing of submissions on the Southland Water and Land Plan. And the next submitter on our list is West Range Farms Limited. So good afternoon to you both and welcome. Thanks for making the original submission. We've read that. And thanks also for providing the pre-circulated evidence and photographs, etc. We've also had a read through that documentation and had a look at that, so you don't need to reread any of that out to us.
Good.
But if you do, we would very much appreciate you just outlining your key points of concern to us, sort of by way of summary, and then we'll see if we have any questions for them.
Okay, yeah, well, we're probably going to ask Chris Wade, maybe after having read our submission, whether you did have any questions for us first.
What we've tended to do is let submitters tell us what their main points of concern are that they'd like us to focus on, and then we go to questions after that. So if there's certain points you want to highlight to us.
Sure, it's probably all points you've heard many times before.
That's all right.
Okay.
So really, you make your presentation to us in terms of your verbal summary of your key points, and then we'll take questions after that.
Cool.
Okay. If you're happy with that.
Yeah, well, I'm Bronwyn, by the way.
Yep.
Chamberlain, and of course, Derek. So our first one that we were considered about and one of the parts of the plan was, of course, the intensive winter grazing.
Yeah.
And the recommended threshold was being 50 hectares. Of course, this is only works out to be 2% of our property. So makes farming and the turning over of farm and cut pasture a lot, well, very unrealistic, really.
Yeah, it's totally impractical for us, that one.
So that's why our suggestion was that you put down 15%, but even the 10% threshold.
Yeah.
To allow that to be still sustainable for us.
Yes.
Yeah. And our other concern with the winter grazing was the, you know, if it has to be consented, can those consents be guaranteed to be in place in time for us to be able to be doing, you know, we're talking 9 months ahead of what, when that crop's being utilised, so we need to have that acknowledgement that we're going to actually be able to be farming at the time of what we need to be farming.
It's whether or not Southland can have enough people on the ground to actually go out and see what we're trying to do,
yep,
and give us the consent in time to plant our crops and get sorted for next year.
Mm. We also questioned with regards to the likes of the summer crop, like turnips, something, if it's not utilised and carried through to the winter, is that then to become part of the proposed 50 hectares to, or, you know, or to be consented for again? What we just need to understand what the ruling is about that, because if you do have a lovely Southland summer and autumn, then we may not need to be having those eaten. So we don't want to just have this crop we're going to have to eat or waste just because we've got to use so much in a certain time. And of course the grazing techniques we thought was a massive one too in relation to winter crop. That can make such a huge difference. We definitely know that ourselves. I mean, I did do the picture that with,
yep,
our techniques that we use in one of our paddocks this winter, and it's common sense. We would have thought a lot of it. But again, it's one of those things that may need to be reiterated amongst farming circles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference. And of course, your retiring of your land to waterways and riparian planting. And we have done a lot of that, and we're quite proud of what we have done.
Yeah, it's just an ongoing process for us. It's certainly not, the whole farm's not done by any means, but it's definitely a work in progress.
Yeah, and I think your photos are good evidence of that.
Yeah, and it's been great because we, you know, we have done it on our own back because, you know, we thought this is a nice thing to be doing, or a good thing to be doing for your own property. But it probably is a bit concerning that we haven't really had any advice as such on how to do these things without actually, you know, the likes of the balanced farm environment or something like that, getting involved with that. It really highlighted things that could be done. I think there's a lot of information that could be shared out there that's not, it's almost like nobody wants to talk to them because they're going to tell us how to do this, but it's not actually like that at all, and it's a bit sad, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, the physiographic zones, as you can see from our map, we have quite a few different zones on the farm, and even then we probably would actually argue that they are what they say they are. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And your concern with the physiographic maps is, you know, if your farmland is classed as a certain type and that you can't do winter grazing or stuff like that, you know, can devalue if you're trying to sell your farm, or what you can do on that farm could be severely devalued.
Yeah, I think realistically we'd probably like to have those regional physiographic zones not included in the plan and be more of on a farm-to-farm basis instead. Whether that, how realistic that is, I really am not sure. I'm not the scientific one on that, so.
Yeah, I don't think it should be in the land and water plan. That can be used as a guide, maybe, and changed if it's proven that that's not the soil type under there, but to have it as a fixed, this is what
regional.
Your land type is, I think would be quite ridiculous.
Farm management plan, well, in principle, we actually are quite agreeable with this. We do think it's, I'm probably thinking that every farmer will have a farm management plan in their mind anyway. It's not necessarily written down, but you've always got a long-term plan of what you want to be doing on your property. And I think it is, with having an environment plan, it is quite good because you are taking some accountability for what you're actually saying you're going to do. And it's rewarding, and it's also challenging. So, but again, too, is that going to... How's that going to be monitored? Is it something we're going to have to put in yearly, or is it something that's just kind of done and put on the shelf? You know, how's that going to be portrayed in the use of farming, I suppose, I'd be querying about. You think that too? What have we got here? Yeah, and the other thing too is that if this plan has to be kind of so-called signed off before we can be doing winter crop or you know, water schemes or whatever, does that mean that that land that we've previously used for that income, whether it's being winter grazing or dairy grazing, is that suddenly not being able to be used until we can get that signed off? And if that's the case, how quickly can that happen? Because we still have to, of course, run a business. As well. Cultivation of the slope and ground, that's probably just putting a stick in the sand as to how we're going to monitor that. We have had our tractor driver himself say, you know, because already he's asking, well, we're turning over paddocks, he's already asking, what am I meant to be doing here? How far away am I staying away from creeks? Blah, blah, blah. So we've had to kind of just use his judgment and our judgment, haven't we, to.
Yep.
It's common sense to with the slope of the land, or you know, in regards to what is being proposed.
You know, it comes down to, I think, you know, we've shown the photos of how we graze stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we are on steeper ground, we tend to use the crop as the buffer. So, you know, staying 20 metres out from a fence, it's a lot of wasted area. Whereas if we can work down the hill and using the crop as the buffer, I mean, is that not a more logical way of doing it? And as you get closer to creek, if it gets wet, you know, you go away somewhere else and perhaps come back to it, you know, rather than starting at your creek and working your way up the hill where everything's flowing back into the creek, that's just dumb. But I think grazing techniques could certainly alleviate or perhaps a lot of that problem.
It would be nice just to hop into a paddock and put a straight line across and just keep moving up, but it doesn't happen.
You know, we spend a lot of time planting our crops, and then we place the baleage and how we're going to graze them off, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't. We just talk about it with our staff and how we're going to do it. We don't necessarily write them down, but we say, right, this is how we're going to do it, and we go. And things have to change during the winter. Well, we quite happily change them.
Yeah, and that's been part of the environment plan that we're doing ourselves. And we brought on the Farm IQ mapping for that because we love how it's a live map. And you to sit down and say, well, hey, if we did it this way, and look at the scenarios of how you can actually do it instead of just putting all the bales down the side of the fence so it's easy, you know, it's been good to have staff discussing it with us as well. It makes them a lot more accountable for actually what they're doing as well on the farm. Yeah. And it's probably leads on to the removing of the non-mechanical cultivation techniques, or as we call it, the spray and pray concept. We have done a lot of spray and pray on the farm. Yep. We do have a lot of steeper faces that we would never put a tractor over. And we've had great success with them. No erosion, there's been no, the grass species has come away underneath the manuka, and the manuka is still standing in a lot of places. It's, you know, up to 7 years later. But it's utilised pasture now, and it's also not full of gorse that it was previously. That's seeding and going straight into the.
If there are sensitive areas, we've fenced them off and planted them in trees, but there's also areas there that are still quite grazable with stock, and they're the areas we've tended to identify and work on. To.
Yeah. So they were our main concerns. I'm sure you've had reiterated many times in the last 5 months. And of course, we just brought in today that we have had our first water quality test done. And so we just only got these ourselves on Friday, and we're very new to the actual results ourselves. But we were quite pleased with them. Now, we just highlighted with the turbidity page how those, the higher reading there, it was quite interesting that it's actually a, we made a point of taking the water sample from just below it. It is actually what we call, it's been a sanctuary on the farm for many years. It's all planted out natives, and it's surrounded by pine trees as well. And it's a huge big duck pond, you could call it. And it was interesting to see that it was pretty quite high, and it's sedimentary.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the water testing one is, we get an independent lady, Fiona Smith, from AB Lyme. She came and did it, and plan is to do it sort of every quarterly.
Yeah.
So 4 times a year we'll do a water test and just to see what the trend is.
Yeah, and all we could kind of go with was the Otago Regional Council's kind of guidelines. And of course that's changed for them now too, hasn't it? Because they're kind of doing a very similar thing, aren't they? Is that a... I'm aware of. Okay, they've changed, the guidelines has changed, but and that's probably maybe a factor for today, is that we don't have any guidelines to actually be going to, so what's it looks good for us, but is it, what's going to be our guidelines? Do we need to be starting to do something now, or is this looking great, or
what is good?
Yeah, what is good?
But I guess that's a point, if we can prove that we're doing everything physically that we can possible, doing everything right, and that water tests are showing the water leaving our property is cleaner than what it is when it comes in, we just think it's a little bit unfair that all of a sudden we've got to apply for consents and a lot of other stuff that we're already doing. We'd far more better put money into fencing and trees than consents and bureaucracy.
Mm. I'm sure you've heard.
Okay, are you happy if we move to questions now?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. For the highlight. All right, Marsh, let's start at your end of the table.
Thank you. Just looking at the turbidity, you say that the highest came out of the top marshbird site out of the sanctuary. So were all of these taken after that rainfall, 10 mils of rain?
Yeah, everything was on the same day. I think it took us 2 hours to go around and do all the water testing.
Did you notice whether the streams are up at all after that, or did they look a bit higher?
They were
probably they're running pretty normal.
They were probably running. I wouldn't have said that 10 to 15 mils probably had too much of an effect on it, because we had a fairly dry August. So
yeah, very dry August. Yeah. And the marshburn one to the left of that was taken on the same stream, but just further down the property.
Yeah, so yeah, the top marsh burn was where it came out of the pond, and the marsh burn is when it left the property.
Yeah. Well, I did have a question about farm management plans and Rule 23, but I think you answered that in your discussion and your explanation this afternoon, so that's been great. So I don't have anything more. Thanks very much for coming in.
Okay.
Yeah, just these creeks and streams, are they the main waterways running, water bodies running through the property? There are others?
That's virtually all of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of our farm runs north-south, so we don't get any side coming in from neighbours or anything like that. A lot of these waterways start on our farm and end, so yeah, we don't get any, not so neighbours, history not running into our farm or anything like that. So this is what happens on our farm.
Yeah.
No influence from anywhere else.
In terms of the spray and pray, this seems to do quite a lot of that. That's grass to grass?
We have cropped it.
Yeah.
Grass. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say we do a lot of it, but there are areas that we've done and had great results out of it.
Has it all been cropped?
No, it hasn't all been cropped. We have done some grass to grass, but yeah, we've had great results with it, and yeah, we'd happily do it again. And I don't think we've had any impact on that land.
Had no failure, crop failures?
No. Well, we certainly know the areas to go to, and you know, some of the real tougher areas, we know we'll plant out in trees and stuff like that. So these are good sunny faces, and you know, we were getting 7-8 ton crops off them. So. Yeah, and they've had plenty of fertiliser over the years, so.
And afterwards you just sow with grass after a crop?
Yep, then we just get the chopper in and sow it with grass, and they're as good as, they're not as good as your paddocks, but the utilisation is good.
Mm. So just one question, where the dead manuka was that a lot of gorse there as well?
Yeah, we've had the spray.
It is ongoing with gorse. Yeah.
We do have a gorse issue. It's ongoing. It's a bit like a second mortgage for us.
Yeah, after your wife. Yeah. But that's regardless of where it is on the farm. That's one thing we're quite aggressive with is gorse. We don't like it, but it always gets popping, etc. Mm. Mm. Yeah, but these blocks just look. The feel good factor is amazing because they just look. There's suddenly no broom and gorse. That's just running rampant.
And we do have, but you know, we've got areas that are earmarked for trees that have definitely got gorse on, but we've just sort of ignored them at the moment. But
just bite your tongue and not worry about them until we can get trees above them.
Thank you.
Edward's pretty much asked my question, but just one. So if you're doing spray and pray and you put a fodder crop in, so turnips or something, and can you just spray and pray back into grass again, or do you have to get in and cultivate?
No, we just spray again with Roundup, you know, so with the helicopter. So there's no mechanical.
Traders don't go near them.
Mm. And that works fine.
Yep.
Thank you.
Just a couple of questions. You've commented on your telemetry of 18. What was the one for 12? Where did that come from when it's stored on the right?
Top motion.
Yeah, that's it's a separate creek. It probably sometimes doesn't get the flow. It's so it can be a little bit stagnated when it gets dry a little bit. So I think the flow, cause where we took it, probably 500 metres up the creek is where it starts. So I think, because August was quite a dry month, we only had 27 mils of rain. And so the flow in that creek probably wasn't quite as high. And the top Merton, the Merton Creek, it ends in our place. Where it starts, it divides. So I took one at each where it starts, and it comes down the farm, halfway down the farm, it joins into one creek, and then before it leaves the property. So I just went to the top of both ones and took a sample from there.
Just, you may comment around intense winter grazing. What you said, what is the consenting, what's going to happen? Can I change it around? What would you like to happen to make that clearer for you in the far as consent process or length of consent? What would you actually like?
I'd like it to go back to common sense. We know our farm. You know, what we've been doing for the last 10 years, I don't know that's had, you know, we've tried to mitigate everything we possibly could.
You know, you're not quite understanding
correctly.
When it comes down to, if you break a limit on the intensive winter grazing, so you're actually required to get a consent, you made the comment that you didn't know what the process was, wouldn't there be enough staff to actually cope with the workload? That's effectively what you said.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to happen to give you, the landowner, confidence that whatever the consenting process looks like from your side of the equation? So in other words, if you need a consent, what would you like the process to be?
Well, we did mention about the fact that if if, you know, and we were quite happy to do the farm environment plan, and if we were to do something like that and had our cultivation techniques in place, you know, noted and discussed and ticked off as such by Environment Southland, then we'd physically like to be left alone to be able to do our own, you know, to do our, not have to go back the next year and then have to resubmit again to say, well, this is what we're doing this year in paddock wise.
Yeah, I think you might have misunderstood me, Lord. I don't think there's a need for the consenting process. I think, from my point of view, I think I'm meeting everything that I possibly could, just because I've got a bit of paper that's signed by Environment South and saying I'm consent, I think, to me, is a total waste of time. I think I can meet those standards. And you know, if we continue with our water testing and all those sorts of things, you know, I think we should be left alone, because I think we can't, well, unless there's better technology out there, I can't see how we can do it any better, even with a bit of paper to say that we're consented to do that. So
what about the people who aren't doing it as it should be done?
Look, for me, the biggest fear is the plane flying over and getting fined. That's what gets me out of bed. So I think people that blatantly flaunt the laws and do things wrong, you know, I think fines are some of the best ways to fix a problem. I mean, don't try and blanket have a rule for everybody. I think, because probably quite a lot of us are doing it very well, but unfortunately there's an element out there that are not doing well, and I think they are the ones that Environment Southland should be after. It's a bit like a calling, you know, if a guy goes and rapes a woman, all of a sudden all males are rapists. Well, that's not fair. There's an element out there that are doing it wrong and making it look bad for the rest of us. So.
I also think too that farmers have to be accountable. If they know of someone that is doing something wrong, it's got to be a bit of dobbing. Like, I know it sounds horrible, but if one person's bringing down 10, then yeah, accountability is a huge thing. Any business, if you're looking after a farm or you're looking after, you know, a township, it's.
What I'd actually like to see Environment Southland do is put up some more water testing. Let's test our rivers. Let's show all the rivers, the Wye, the Reedy, the Aparima, whatever, and what is their water quality, and then start boring down and telling us where the hot spots are. If someone fills a map up there and it showed us Eastern Bush as an alert, you know, I'd be certainly making sure that I don't want Environment Southland coming up and prosecuting me because I'm doing something wrong. So I think we need to actually, you know, publicise the water quality, and then start boring down and highlighting the areas that are of concern. I'm quite certain if you come over, you know, from what I can gather, I've seen the results, but the Wye River, I think, meets a lot of the national water quality standards. So if that area is doing everything right and that water's fine, well then, you know, perhaps Environment South should go to the hotspots and start actually working out where the problem is. I don't think, Lord, that having consents, you know, for 90% of the farmers that are doing everything right, I mean, what is the point?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't have any further questions other than what the other commissioners have already covered. And you have raised a number of issues that are very common themes from a large number of submitters, so you can rest assured we will be giving those serious consideration. But it's been very useful to hear from you and to also see graphically the good management practices that you are employing on your farm, so that's been helpful. Thanks very much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.